Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 27, about Govardhan Hill. Have you two been to Vrindavan? Not yet. May you one day go to Vrindavan. And when you go to Vrindavan, your journey to Vrindavan will be incomplete without going to Govardhan Hill. In fact, that's the best from my many visits to Vrindavan. It's the best. It's Govardhan Hill. And doing parikrama of Govardhan Hill depends on how much time you're there. You know, some people don't spend very much time there. So it's not the same unless you walk around Govardhan Hill. Some people just like get in a taxi or a rickshaw but if you walk around Govardhan Hill, it can take easily, if you walk at a good pace, it'll take 6 hours. Yeah, but if you walk a little slower, it'll take you a little bit longer. But some people, they do dandabats parikrama. That means they have a stone and they pay their obeisances, and as they stretch their arms out, they place the stone where their hand touches, and then they stand up and they go to where the stone is. They pick up the stone and then they pay obeisances again, stretch out their arms to where the stone lands, and go all around Govardhan Hill doing that. You can't do that one day. Yeah, it takes some time. But when you go to Govardhan, you'll see a lot of people do that. It's a kind of ecstasy. I mean, it looks like torture, but it's not. And the reason is, two reasons. Govardhan is very merciful. And the other is, the dust of Braj is very merciful. Your body becomes completely covered with Braj, dust of Vrindavan. And I can vouch for it. It lifts your consciousness. The dust of Vrindavan is not material. There's material dust, and then there's the dust of Vrindavan, and it's magical. So, may you one day visit Vrindavan. So now we're going to be hearing about one of the words in the song was Giri Varadhari. Giri Dhari. The name of Krishna is Giri, means hill. Dhari means the lifter. He lifted Govardhan Hill. And it's a celebrated pastime of a celebrated place, and we're hearing about the pastime of Krishna's lifting Govardhan Hill. And he lifted Govardhan Hill. It spans over several chapters, so I'm just going to give you a little background. Krishna was considering, my devotee, Lord Indra, he sometimes gets proud because he's very powerful and has lots of influence over other people. When you have wealth and when you have all those things and your heart's not pure, you know what happens? Pride. So Krishna wanted to remove Indra's pride. That was one main thing, and he did it. We're going to be hearing about what happened after Krishna removed his pride. He wasn't completely free from pride, but he was substantially free from pride. And he also wanted to do some other things. He wanted to intimately associate with the residents of Vrindavan for 7 days uninterruptedly. They had association of Krishna day and night for 7 days. They really wanted unbroken association, and he gave that to them through this Leela. And when there's a sense of danger, devotees take more intense shelter of the personality guided, so he wanted to accomplish that, so he did. And he wanted to have them experience astonishment. We discussed that at length. There's a whole chapter on astonishment of the residents of Vrindavan. Astonishment is a secondary rasa. Astonishment. It enhances the primary rasa. And then he closed the curtain. So there, after the event, they were wondering, who is he? He's not an ordinary person. Is he this? Is he that? And then they started remembering all of the other wonderful things he did and wonderful things he did. Their minds just went flowing to wonderful Krishna. And then we heard Nanda Maharaj answer them by reciting the words that were spoken by Gargamuni at the time of Krishna's name-giving ceremony, because Gargamuni was like super astrologer for the Yadu dynasty, and Nanda was descended of that dynasty. So we heard Gargamuni's words, which were celebrated words throughout all of Vrindavan about who is Krishna. And then there was a big festival in honor of Nanda and Krishna after the Govardhan Leela. And everyone went back to their occupation of taking care of the cows. And then Indra had his experience. I did something really bad. You know that feeling. And this one wasn't just like a mistake, it was something really bad. And so he went to Lord Brahma, who said, you did it again, Indra. When are you going to learn? But I'll have a suggestion for you. If you go to apologize to Krishna right now, he may not even look at you. But if you go with one of his dear devotees, then his heart will be soft. So let's go visit Surabhi. And they visited Surabhi, and Brahma requested Surabhi, you go with him to Krishna, and Krishna will be peaceful. So Surabhi came. This is chapter 27. Surabhi came, and by indication of sages, Indra spoke first. So we've been hearing the prayers of Indra to Krishna. Really high philosophies, like hard to understand what he was saying. But one of the things that he was saying is that the personality of Godhead, unlike me and other conditioned souls, the personality of Godhead is free from the modes of nature. He is eternally perfect. And so there can't be any imperfection in him. And so his action of punishing me in the way that he did, there's no wrong in what he did, because he's my father. Now, Indra's very old and Krishna's only 7 years old. But Krishna knows, is the source of everything, and so he's his father. And fathers are very kind to their children, please forgive me. He said many other things. So now we're just going to be discussing two verses where he's anticipating. When I came, it was really nice. Krishna was smiling. It looked like he had forgiven me. But maybe, you know, he's going to punish me, and who knows how he might punish me. Maybe he'll have Yamaraj come and finish me. So I want to request Krishna to not punish me further. You know, I've learned my lesson, and don't give me a death penalty for what I did. Because it was attempted murder. And that generally calls for death penalty. So reading Canto 10, chapter 27, and I think it's texts 8 and 9. Yeah. So the translation reads, engrossed in pride over my ruling power, ignorant of your majesty, I offended you, O Lord. May you forgive me. My intelligence was bewildered, but let my consciousness never again be so impure. And the purport from the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. Now this chapter was not translated by Prabhupada. It was translated because Prabhupada finished through Canto 10, chapter 13. So after that was his disciples. Purport. Although Lord Krishna protected the residents of Braja by lifting Govardhan Hill, he had not yet punished Indra himself, and Indra feared that at any moment Sri Krishna might call the son of Vivaswan, Yamaraj, who punishes impudent persons who defy the laws of God. Paragraph. Indra was quite fearful and thus begged the Lord's forgiveness on the plea that he could be purified only by Krishna's mercy, that he was too stubborn to learn good lessons through mere punishment. Interesting logic, huh? In fact, despite Indra's humility in this case, his heart was not completely purified. Later on, in this canto, Canto 10, we will find that when Lord Krishna once took a parijata flower from Indra's kingdom, poor Indra again reacted violently against the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It was a big battle. Thus, we should aspire to go back to our eternal home in the kingdom of Krishna and should not become entangled in the imperfect life of the material gods or demigods. So now I'm going to be reading some commentaries by our acharyas that Bhanu Swami very kindly has translated from Sanskrit to English. Indra is fearing in this way. I lifted Govardhan, Krishna speaking. I lifted Govardhan to protect Braja, not to punish you. Now I will call Yamaraj and arrange for your punishment. Fearing such talk, Indra, in great fear, speaks, quote, you are the most famous father and guru because you are most merciful and forgiving. You can forgive the offense of this ignorant person immersed in the ocean of power and forgetting your powers. You should not purify me by punishment because I'm like an animal. The moment after the master has beaten the animal, it again commits the same offense. Again, instead, you should mercifully correct me, my bad tendency, so that my animal tendencies do not arise again. Unquote. Indra does not make this prayer with a completely pure heart, for he shows submissiveness to save himself. In the seventh verse, he mentions this. So we're in verse 8, but he mentioned. He's interested in saving himself, not having a hard time. Then, later at the time of Krishna stealing the Parijata flower and other pastimes, Indra again forgets and commits the same mistake. Yeah?
I have a question. Even when Indra prayed to Krishna to not have his animal tendencies, why did he have his animal tendency again for the third time?
Why did he have it? Why don't we learn mistake from our mistakes? Is that your question?
Yeah.
That's your question? Sometimes, it's common, people will make a mistake, and if they're fortunate enough to recognize the mistake or have it pointed out to them by somebody else and they acknowledge it, and they feel regretful, they repent. But if the root is still there, and the root is the modes of nature, if the root is still there, the tendency can come out again. Yeah, it's the modes of nature. Supposing somebody, here's a mode of nature example, anger. So someone goes, ah! Oh gee, I'm really sorry I did that. But that mode of nature is still there, so later on, ah! They're sorry about losing their temper, but they do it again and they do it again, because the mode of nature is there. So? Yeah. In order to become free from mistake, you have to become free from the influence of the modes of nature. Now, how do you do that? You contact the Supreme Pure and you can become pure, free from the modes of nature. That's how. Otherwise, you can go up. You know that one? Like a Ferris wheel? Yeah. Okay. Here's Jiva Goswami. Similar points. Oh, Lord of all devatas like me. This is Indra speaking to Krishna. He's a devata. Krishna is the Lord of all the devatas. Oh, one is capable of forgiving. That's a hint, please. Because of what I stated, the benefactor of the universe, that's you, is fit to forgive me, even if I have committed offense caused by not knowing your glories, since I was devoid of discrimination. Since I was proud of my own powers, thus the offense is greater. That is, he knew, but then he forgot. And he was proud, and that's what caused him to forget. But you should forgive me because I forgot about your powers. You should not consider offenses committed out of ignorance. Since you have descended to benefit the universe, and are the crest jewel of mercy and generosity, it is insignificant for you to forgive my offense, which was committed only once. You should forgive me, since I will never again offend you or your devotees. But he does it again. Yeah. I have the mentality of being an offender to you and your devotees, and I was without knowledge, since I am not capable. How can such an offense not occur again? But you can forgive. A person who is capable of doing this, that's you, even though I'm an offender. And the comment of Jiva Goswami is, this is the prayer of a person who is not too pure in heart. He realizes his incapability, as expressed in the previous verse, which was being fearful of you only. He will again forget when Krishna takes the Parijata flower. And other commentaries almost the same. So that's text 8. And now we're moving on to text 9. Indra continues his prayer to Krishna. You descend into this world, O transcendent Lord, to destroy the warlords who burden the earth and create many terrible disturbances, O Lord. You simultaneously act for the welfare of those who faithfully serve your lotus feet. And the BBT purport reads, this verse utilizes an attractive poetic device. Lord Krishna's descent into the world is said to be for abhava, literally non-existence or destruction of the demoniac warlords, and simultaneously the bhava, or existence or prosperity of those who faithfully serve the Lord's lotus feet. That's a literary ornament. It's a play on words, bhava and abhava. True existence indicated here by the word bhava is sat chit ananda, or eternal, full of bliss and full of knowledge. To an uninformed observer, it may appear that Sri Krishna is simply rewarding his followers and punishing his enemies the way an ordinary person might do. This specific doubt about the Lord is raised extensively in the sixth canto in connection with Krishna's taking the side of the faithful demigods against the faithless demons in a particular cosmic war. In that canto, the Vaishnava authorities clearly explain that, in fact, Lord Krishna is the Father and the Lord of all living beings, and that all his activities are therefore meant for the benefit of all existence. Lord Krishna does not really cause the non-existence of anyone. Rather, he curbs the foolish, destructive material ways of those who defy the laws of God. These laws are created to ensure prosperity, harmony, and happiness of the entire creation, and their violation is an unjustifiable disturbance. Paragraph. Certainly, Indra hoped that Lord Krishna would count him among the devotees and not the demons, although considering Indra's action, one might doubt where his loyalties actually lay. Indra was aware of this possible doubt, and thus, as we find in the next verse, he tried his best to surrender to the Supreme Lord. And now we're reading commentary. Vishwanath writes, Indra states, I am foolish. You appeared in the world just for our benefit because of our prayers. That's what happened. The demigods went to the shore of the milk ocean, headed by Brahma. They offered prayers, help. Demoniac kings have overburdened the earth, please help. So Vishnu came in the form of Lord Krishna. So you appeared in this world for our benefit because of our prayers. Even knowing this, I have been blind. Now, having been punished, I have attained better vision and can understand the truth. In order to destroy those leaders of the demons who create burden for the earth, and to produce auspiciousness for those who serve your feet, you appear. But I am neither of these. Thus, you neither destroy me nor bestow on me auspiciousness. You are neutral towards me. That is my misfortune. Interesting. Jiva Goswami writes, O Lord, who cannot be perceived by the knowledgeable senses, by the knowledge of the senses, you are completely invisible. But you appear on this earth for auspiciousness for those who serve your feet. O Lord, worthy of worship, you can make me accomplish service to you. Indra speaks with repentance, showing his knowledge of Krishna's powers and his own foolishness. I know that you have appeared to benefit us because we requested you to come. But still I have committed offense. How foolish I am. Therefore, you should forgive me. He's making a don't punish me, forgive me appeal overall. One more commentary. Sanatana Goswami writes, O Lord, who cannot be perceived by the knowledge of senses, you are completely invisible, but you appear on earth for auspiciousness for those who serve your feet. O Lord, worthy of worship, you can make me accomplish service to you. So, he's not saying, you came to create auspiciousness for those who serve you, and I'm one. He's saying, you came for auspiciousness to those who serve you, you can make me one of your servants. Very clever. Indra speaks with repentance, showing his knowledge of Krishna's powers and his foolishness. I know that you have appeared to benefit us because we requested you to come. But still I have committed offense. How foolish I am. Therefore, please forgive. Forgiving sin and not having it occur again can happen easily because of your nature. O Lord, who slept under the axle of a cart and showed affection for the devotees. You know that pastime? Sleeping under the cart? Yeah? You're familiar? The cart demon? Shakatasura? When Krishna was just a few months old, like still really tiny, the mother and father had a festival. And, you know, different at that time, instead of like just having him go play in the backyard, they placed him in a safe place because they were cowherds and they had these big heavy carts. Instead of having a storage room, they just put heavy stuff on the cart, bullock cart, in the back behind the house. So they put the child beneath the cart so he would be safe from people unknowingly trampling him or something. And there was a cart demon. He hid himself beneath the cart, and Krishna knew it. He's just a little boy. Little boys have little tiny legs. But somehow his little tiny legs reached the bottom of the cart that was loaded up with heavy pots and this and that. And he kicked the cart, and the pots went flying. And he kicked in such a way that Shakatasura was killed, and his demon body went stretching out in the backyard where the cart was. And people heard the clamor and the pots going flying and all the noise. And so they started offering prayers to Lord Narayan, please protect our son. And then they started speculating, how did this happen anyway? And little boys said, well, Krishna kicked and the cart went flying and we saw it. And they said, oh, you children say all kinds of things. And but fortunately, because Nanda Maharaj is such a pious soul, their little beloved son was protected. He was safe. That's how they processed the whole event. So that's the Shakatasura, the O Lord who slept under the axle of a cart and showed affection for the devotees. Forgiving sins is suitable for giving liberation to the wicked. You appear in this world to give liberation to the leaders of troops who are burdened to the earth, O Lord, who plays and shines. You appear in this world for increasing prema in the devotees. Giving liberation to demons is also suitable for you. And, yeah, the rest is just to repeat. We spent some time yesterday morning discussing the whole, the big picture of what's happening here. Conditioned souls commonly have pride. It goes like this. There's a little math formula. Something plus something equals something. So a heart, the fruits of piety plus a heart that's impure equals pride. So some people, they engage in pious activity because they know it will generate for them fruits of piety, because they want to be the enjoyer of the fruits of piety. But if the heart is impure, then the fruits of piety will just make them proud. We find that in the world. So the real necessity is making the heart pure. Now Indra, what to speak of going to heaven, he's the king of heaven. How much piety is there within Indra's background become to take that post? But his heart's not pure. Because his heart's not pure, although he's this elevated post, he does impure things because his heart's not pure, because of pride. And Krishna wanted, the very outset, Krishna wanted to relieve Indra of pride. So this was part of his plan. Now, we're hearing in these verses, his pride wasn't completely gone because later he exhibited pride again. There was a situation, it's described later in the 10th canto. Krishna went to visit the king of heaven, Indra, with Satyabhama. First he went with Rukmini. You know who's Rukmini? One of Krishna's wives? Yeah, yes. Very good. So, Rukmini saw this Parijata tree and she requested Indra, may I have one of the flowers of the Parijata tree? It only grows in heaven. He said, sure. And when Krishna and Rukmini returned back to Dwarka, Satyabhama saw the Parijata tree and said, Krishna, can you get me not just a Parijata flower, but a Parijata tree and plant it in my yard here in Dwarka? You know Satyabhama. She's like, Rukmini's got a flower, I got to get the tree. Yeah. She's kind of like spirited lady. So Krishna went and requested from Indra. And Indra said, sorry, this Parijata tree, it's only meant for heaven. No Parijata trees can go to Dwarka. And Krishna wasn't happy with that response. So they had a battle. Indra went to war with Krishna over the Parijata tree. Guess who won? Yeah. And Krishna took the Parijata tree. But he was like so proprietary about his Parijata tree, you know, because of pride. Well, this is mine. And, you know, not like everything wonderful goes to Krishna. That's how a devotee thinks. But he was so attached to his prosperity and wealth and being prideful, he became blinded again. He couldn't understand everything wonderful should be given to Krishna. Fantastic. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. That should have been his response. But instead it was no in a battle and he lost. So Krishna was helping to curb his pride once again. So just like your question earlier, you know, somebody makes a mistake and they feel, oh, I made a mistake. And they feel badly about it. They recognize it. They repent. They try to correct themselves. And he's made the statement, I won't do it again. But he does it again. Because tendency comes out. Mode of nature, tendency. So what's important for those who want to be dear to Krishna is to become pure. But the, you know, the good news is Krishna is supremely pure, and by serving the supremely pure, we become pure. It may take a while because we're kind of attached to our favorite impurities, like Indra was attached to his Parijata tree. So it may take a while. But there isn't a better method than contact the Supreme Pure and we can become pure. And the prayers of Indra are indicative of his recognizing the problem is inside him. He already stated by Krishna chastising him and punishing him, that was for his own good. He wasn't like, oh, why'd you do that? He understood why he did that. It was to purify him. Sometimes we don't understand when we're being corrected by Krishna that it's good for us. Many times we don't understand it's good for us and we don't feel good about it. But sometimes he's not always going to like let us, you know, bang us in the head if we do something stupid. He does different things, but he may also, you know, remind us, hey, don't act foolishly, don't act pridefully, don't act stubbornly, don't act independently. He'll help us. And that's his merciful nature. And in different ways, because at different times we need different ways to be reminded of what we've forgotten. Okay, so that's our topic for this session. See if there's some discussion.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
My question is, you had mentioned that Indra goes to Lord Brahma and says that, hey, I am in trouble. I have offended Krishna. And Brahma says, you know, you are not learning from your mistakes. You have done it again. So that I am able to relate to that because I am someone who is not very easy to, who doesn't learn easily from mistakes. So I keep committing the same thing over and over again. And what I feel is because of that, I'm not able to reach my full potential, whether it is career-wise or spiritually and all that. So I wanted, how do you recommend that, you know, I learn quickly from a mistake?
more quickly instead of slowly.
Yes.
That's what you're looking for.
Yes.
Well, here's a few thoughts on that question. One is, if that's what you really want, then Krishna will help you. There's a nice Bhagavad Gita verse. We just spoke about it the other day. Yayatam mam prapadyante tang sataiva bhajamyaham. Krishna says, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. As you have regard for Krishna, he'll reciprocate with you according to your regard for him. So if the regard to Krishna is, Krishna, I'm a slow learner, and I'd like to learn more quickly, please help me, likely you're going to get some quick learning opportunities. And sometimes it's like, whoa, that was too quick. It hurt. You know, like I wasn't ready for that one. We start complaining about the reciprocation that Krishna provides. That happens. But the intention behind is Krishna is very kind and he's doing whatever he does because he's very kind. So sometimes he won't make it happen more quickly because he knows you can't take it. And so it's going to be slow even though you're asking, you know, more quickly. Because it's, you know, he doesn't give us a test beyond that which we can pass or become successful. By having the desire, Krishna will help you, but it may not look like, you know, you would design it. But he knows best. Father knows best. There's this nice verse in Canto 4, when Prithu becomes crowned the king. Vena was his father and he was bad, wicked. Prithu became the successor. When Prithu was crowned, Lord Shiva came, Lord Brahma came, Lord Vishnu came. And to Vishnu he said, you are the father of all living entities. And the father has the best interest of the son in mind. So whatever it is that you wish to do, I accept in advance. Because I accept that you're my well-wisher. So whatever it is that you wish, that's fine with me. So it's not neutrality towards becoming purified, but it's placing yourself in submission in the hands of the personality of Godhead as the ultimate well-wisher of you, and because you have a certain function in relation to family, in relation to your family members, this kindness will go to them as well as to you because of your relation with them. Then another point is, you associate with those that are moving more swiftly. Sadhu Sangha. Which will help enhance the purification process. Just by associating with those that are pure, you become like them. That's a lesson in Bhagavad Gita also. Sangat Sanjayate Kama. You develop desires, kama, like those with whom you associate. You know, you associate with bad people, you become a bad person. You associate with scholars, you become a scholar. You associate with drunkards, you become a drunkard. You associate with people who are good and pure, then you'll become more quickly, right, just by that association. So that's another principle. So, you know, some people like their privacy, and some people understand, even though I have private nature, I need some good association along the way because it'll help me, yeah, mature and go further than I would if I'm just on my own. Some strength beyond my strength. And a third point is just regular. We can associate with Krishna by hearing, by sound. The whole of the Vedic wisdom is through sound, Shruti. So we just by hearing, and regularly hearing, and regularly hearing, that'll enhance the purification process just through sound. Very mild, not violent, not abrasive, it's very gentle. But it's very purifying, because that sound is Krishna. We're associating with the Supreme Pure. So we'll become pure just through sound. There's so many recorded materials these days. You know, some really bad stuff, but some really good stuff. So, sound. And when you're with sadhu, in sadhu sangha, they make sounds too. They make spiritual sounds, so that's good. Katayantas chamam nityam tushanti charamanti cha. Krishna says, it brings solace to the heart. When you're feeling that purification and solace in the heart, it makes keeping going in that purified direction so much easier because it's so sweet. It's so natural. Okay.
Follow-up question on...
Sure.
Yes. So, you specified one of the paths is to be with, surround yourself with devotees or with association who will help you on the path or who are faster on that path. So sometimes in my case, when I listen to them, I feel a sense of dejection. Why am I unable to do that as much as they can, right? Certain things like...
You feel insufficiency from your side?
Yes.
Like I'm weak and they're strong, why is that?
Why am I not able to do things as fast as they are? Like I've been doing this for so long. I've been in the same group as them for so long. They've been able to accomplish so much in such short a time.
Okay.
So it tends to sometimes...
Discourage.
Yes. I don't know how, and it's always wavering. Sometimes it's encouraging and I'm saying, oh wow, that's amazing. I want to do that. And at sometimes it's like, oh man, I'm never going to be able to do that, right? So how do I?
Well, we got here a little late because I was responding to somebody in Perth, Australia that is struggling with the very same thing. So I can just repeat some of those messages. One saying or little sutra is acceptance and progress. By introspection, accept this is who I am. This is where I've been. This is my spiritual trajectory. And I'm accepting it. Say it negatively. Don't compare yourself. That's... It can easily be offensive. It can also easily be lamentation. You know, oh, I'm not. Instead of, this is who I am. This is where I am right now. And you know, these other people, you know, just expand it. Who knows how many lifetimes they have invested prior to this lifetime to get to where they are. And I have not invested the same amount in previous lifetimes to get to where they are. I am where I am. I take responsibility for my past free will choices, and here I am. That's the acceptance, the introspection, and this is where I am. And then the next comes, not like, oh gosh, I'm not where they are. It's the next comes, what are some doable steps, one or two, that I can take to get to where I want to go. Now, make sure that you where you want to go is not just like comparing yourself to them. You know, it's come from Guru Sadhu Shastra. That's where you want to go. You know, what is that? What does it look like? What does it feel like? Let's just take purity because that was the topic. Or free from pride, or what, you know, something. So what's a doable step for me? And you don't need to answer me right now, but it's something you need, and you know, then your support structure, whatever that is, your family and those that are guiding you and those who you trust, you can open your heart to in confidence, and they'll maintain confidentiality, and you're looking for some support and some confirmation that you think this is a doable step for me. You know, can I hold myself accountable to you so you can help me do that doable step? Not like, you know, hit a home run, but just, yeah, make a step. And then do it for some time and then have a little party and celebrate. Yay, I did it. So now what's next? Like that. Just keep going in little steps. Towards that goal which you hold in your heart is that's a goal for me. You know, and just like, so, your daughter, how old are you?
Nine.
And, you know, you're your age and I'm my age. So here, there's three different sets of ages. There's more than that, but, so, For me, it's like, what's the, using one of my God brother's phrases, what's the final quarter? Like it's a sports analogy. But you know, so you're, you know, you're midway. Now what's the other half going to be? And her, you know, it's, I'm nine and you know, what's going, what do I want to be when I grow up? Like that's the, you know, so there's some goal. And if that goal is just on the material side, that, you know, you're missing out a lot. So as a parent, you would like the goal to also be in terms of, you know, culture and character and sense of values and, you know, own them, not just, you know, say them back when they, you ask the question because they know that they'll get a pat on the head. But it's something that they own. It's a value that they carry in their heart. And that's what I want to be. So, for yourself, what's important to you? Not just like you get an A in your Bhakti Shastri exam. No, but you, not just your daughter. What is it that you want? Do you want to just like be up to speed with the others? Or, you know, what's your goal? What's really important to you? And I don't need an answer. You need the answer. And, you know, what's a doable step towards that? So it's self-examination and it gives impetus to go forward. Even I'm a little slow at going forward. I mean, I have talked with kids all the time. And, you know, sometimes they say, I have to try so hard to do well my exams, and when I don't do well, I tried so hard, and it's just like I'm really messed up. And I say, I can relate. Because some, you know, when I was in high school and college, I'd have to put in 5 to 10 times the amount of time and energy and effort that some kids are just like, piece of cake. And I wasn't feeling resentful about that. Just like, that was my capacity. And so I did what my capacity required. And I did very well in school. You know, Krishna's mercy. But I had to make a lot of effort because doing well in school was important because I had a career goal. I was on a, you know, path to become a doctor. So, that changed, but having a goal helps you put in the energy to reach the goal. And if you have spiritual goals in addition to the other kinds, which are important goals too, spiritualize them. And then you can pass that on to your daughter. And she can, you know, get her compass out and say, okay, I'm going to make some decisions. When I become teenage, the kids are going to say, do this and do that. And I got my compass out and I'm going to say what I'm going to say. Because I have my value system and it's like mine. And I can say, I'm going to make decisions about stuff. That's part of growing up and it's part of the concern of parents. And so you're going to be able to pass that on if you have it. The same with, so then ultimately keep the pairing going is the spiritual value, the long-term goal. So work towards it. Don't compare yourself. Recognize who you are. This is where I am. This is the endowment that Krishna has given to me for my past activities and choices. Here I am. And I'm happy to be who I am. I'm accepting of who I am. And now how can I grow in directions that align with what my values and my goals are. Life management. And, you know, the material principles, that kind of language is used, but spiritual principles, then we have the ultimate bearing. Things are moving in that direction. And then by your modeling it, you can show your daughter, this is how you do it. And that'll be a big impetus for parents is, you know, I want to be able to be a model for my children. Before there's children, it's different. And then when there's children, then it's, the whole picture changes. Okay.
Thanks, Maharaj.
No, do you have something you want to add to this discussion or some curiosity point or something you want to share?
I actually have a question. How do you spiritualize any goals that you have already?
How do you do what?
How do you spiritualize any goals you already have?
How do you
spiritualize
the goals that you already have? Okay. Well, let's take a guess. And one of the things that's a goal for you is you like to do well in school.
Well, I don't want to do bad. Like, I just like to try my best.
Okay.
I do not like to do bad, though.
Okay. Like, so now take that. I don't want to be bad in school.
Chant every day and pray so I do good in school.
Okay. So now, to spiritualize all of that, you look inside and see, you know, like you've seen paintings of Hanuman, and he goes like this. What's inside? Ram. Yeah. So to spiritualize your goals, you look inside and see, is pleasing Krishna really there? Or it's just like I heard it spoken in Sunday school, and that's what you're supposed to say when you get that question. Is it something that's really, so you, if you, the more you can try to do just in school, just take that part of your life, and you don't want to do badly, and you want to do like, just do okay at least, you just don't want to do, you don't want to mess up. So take that and spiritualize it as, I want to make that as an offering to Krishna. And you try to move in that direction, consciousness in that direction. This is my desire. Krishna, I want to make this as an offering unto you. I'm your devotee, and I want to please you. So I want to do as nicely as I can and not mess up because I want you to smile and be pleased with me. But I know you're very kind and merciful, but I want to see a big smile. And so I want to do it for that reason. And that's how you can spiritualize your goal and your academic part of your life.
That makes more sense too, but I actually have another goal also.
Okay, what's
my
that?
My other goal is I'm writing a book on my iPad. And
you're writing a book.
Yeah, and I don't know how to spiritualize that goal also.
Okay. Here's a lesson that I learned about that. Once upon a time, I had a professor who wrote poetry, and I started developing an interest in writing poetry, so I started writing poetry. And I thought it was a way to like find out about myself by creative writing. And then somebody gave me some really good advice, which I'm sharing with you. If you want to write poetry, you want to write something, learn first from those that are very elevated souls, the poetry that they've written, or the writing that they've written. Learn from them how to connect with reality with a capital R, how to write nicely. And learn from them, and then write your poetry and write your iPad book. From learning from those that are like, wow, that's an awesome person. Learn from them. You're 9 years old?
Yeah.
Okay. I know a girl that's 9 years old, and her parents told me that she's developed a fascination for gymnastics. Yeah. An Indian girl. She lives in India, but she wants to be an Olympic gymnast. So she's taking gymnastic courses three different places, three days of the week. And she has her role model, hero, And I know the name of her hero, but so she's looking up to somebody that's like, I want to be like that. So if you're writing, I'm just using this as an example. You brought up this other goal, the goal of writing something. So I'm making the suggestion, learn from people that already know how to write very nicely and enter into their mood, their style, their personality, their skill. You got a hero out there, somebody that's like a good writer, multiple good writers, and then you learn from them, and then you go back to your iPad and continue. And you know who the best writers are, right?
Like J.K. Rowling. Like, I'm a book that's as nice as, like, Harry Potter, maybe, or something. And I
want to
be, like, a good writer.
Okay, good. The best of good writers, they're the Vaishnavas.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, because they don't want to write about fiction. They want to write about reality. And it's reality is more interesting than fiction. Okay. Okay. Learn from people who are really gifted. Okay? Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam and Ramayana and... Let me share something with you. For the past 11 years, I've been going to China.
Wow.
Yeah. And I go for at least 2 months, 2 to 2.5 months every year. And I started to really appreciate the Chinese people. I mean, the government's another thing, but our government's another thing too. The Chinese people are fantastic. So something I learned about them is they have some very essential. There's three very, very universal literatures that everybody reads in school. And one of them is a story about a Buddhist monk in the 7th century, 600s. Now just listen before you respond. And he made a by foot pilgrimage across deserts. He was gone from India, went from China to India by foot. It was very dangerous, very dangerous. Traveled by the Silk Road, maybe you've heard of the Silk Road before, you'll learn about it in school. And, you know, it was a multiple year journey and he went back. He kept a biography about everything that happened, autobiography of his journey. And then about 4 centuries later, somebody wrote, they fictionalized it a little bit and added Hanuman and stories from Ramayana in this young Buddhist monk's pilgrimage to India. So now everybody in China grows up reading about Hanuman. Because there's this celebrated book about a Buddhist monk that he popularized Buddhism in China because he went and studied at the place where the seat of Buddhist learning was at the time in India. And so it's really cool. Yeah. So now I didn't know that before I started visiting, but it's a celebrated literature. This author of this man's life is Zhen Zhao is his name, the Buddhist monk. So this author appreciated Ramayana and culture of India became influenced by Ramayana. So that's a good book for you to read. Ramayana. Valmiki Ramayana. And it's a nice publication. It's really easy to read. The language isn't too difficult. 9-year-old can easily understand it. Ramayana and Mahabharata. And then you learn how writers that know how to write. And then you don't get Harry Potter. You get, you know, reality. Okay. Okay. There's different versions and different writers' writing skills. Some of them is that language is like eating sawdust. And some of them it's like needing a glubjamin. So they can recommend to you the one that's like the glubjamin instead of the sawdust. Okay. Okay, do we have some questions online?
Guru Maharaj, yesterday there was a question that was pending from Yamuna Jeevan Prabhu.
Yeah, and it's not... I read the passage, and the explanation is right in the purport, so I think if he just reads what's in the purport, he'll have the answer to his question. The question had to do with yesterday morning's class. I spent some time about God is very merciful. So even when he does things like he did with Indra, he humiliated Indra, it was benevolent. It was kindness to Indra. So I said, the nature of I was expressing, the nature of God is he's very kind. And I was objecting to people who try to induce other people to worship God because if you don't, you're going to get spanked. Because he's vengeful, he's wrathful, and lightning and thunder come and like, you know, smack you in the head. So you don't want to get smacked in the head, so, you know, be nice. So Jamuna Jeevan was referring to a passage where Krishna was encouraging the devotees to worship Govardhan by saying that if you don't, Govardhan has the capacity to manifest different forms, and you may have some problem with some negative forms that Govardhan may manifest if you don't properly worship. Which is true. So my answer is to Jamuna Jeevana, it's true. It wasn't like intimidation. It's true. So like, you know, supposing somebody says, just for example, supposing somebody says, if you engage in animal slaughter, worst of all, if you engage in slaughtering cows, you're going to get a big reaction. That's not intimidation. That's fact. So it's not, you know, we don't go around with a stick in our hand and bashing people saying, you know, stop this or else. But it's just, when we were to say it, it's a fact. And Krishna wanted, what Krishna wanted was, specifically it's mentioned in the verse, he wanted Indra to, like, cool it, you know, become free from his pride. So he was saying different things. He was saying atheistic philosophy, karmakanda philosophy, just to get to the point where they would worship Govardhan and not worship Indra. He was, you know, being very clever, saying many things, not out of intimidation, but out of well-wishing. That's my response. Next.
These were questions that came yesterday after the Srimad Bhagavatam class. Are pastimes of Krishna with Brahma and Indra demonstrating the fact that no living entity is spared from the flickering nature of the material world? So question from Radha Kunja Bihari Prabhu.
It's not a question, it's a comment. Right?
Are pastimes of Krishna with Brahma and Indra demonstrating the fact?
Yes, it's a statement, it's a fact.
Right, okay. If so, how do I protect myself from such infractions?
Well, become pure. And if you find there's impurity, you work on the impurity, but work on purity. And you become free from impurity. You associate with the Supreme Pure, as we've been saying, you'll become pure. So keep sadhu sangha and it'll help you become pure too. Do nice devotional practices and it'll make you pure.
Question from Raiksha. How to, okay, Rukmavati Mataji.
Okay. Okay.
How to respond when someone says mean things to us on our back?
You smile.
What is it, Mar? I didn't hear. Okay.
Go ahead. You can do that too, but make sure you smile. Don't get into reaction. This is whole Dhruva Maharaj topic. Respond, don't react. We have an option. You can react. Oh yeah. You said some mean things, and you said it behind my back. If you got something mean to say, say it to me, and I'll tell you. That's the react. And then you smile. And then you can say something. You can act, you can make choices of what's appropriate given the person and the circumstance and the place and so forth. Okay? That for, this devotee could go back and hear the respond versus react discussion from the Dhruva Maharaj seminar. We went over it several times and it's all, you know, loaded up in that section.
Question from Atulya Mataji. You just mentioned, this was yesterday, you just mentioned that humility is tested when someone hurts us and we still should remain genuinely humble. How to then draw boundaries with others?
Well, humble, go visit it again. Humble doesn't mean you don't say anything. Humble is, you have a spiritual conception of who you are. That's true humility. Now, it may be appropriate that you remain silent. It may be appropriate that you speak later. It may be appropriate that you put your foot down. So many things could be the response, but the response should come from the position of who you are, a spirit soul. You make, this is again, this respond is from the position of goodness, and you choose, you're in, when you're in the mode of goodness, you have more freedom of choice. When you get angry or retaliatory, your choices shrink. You're driven by the lower mode of nature and your freedom has diminished. You're compelled by that lower mode. And when you have a higher mode, mode of goodness and transcendence, then your options expand. And then you can select what's most appropriate, going to be most effective. And you have, there's all kinds of options, but you won't even think of those options if you're in the lower modes. You're like an animal. You just snarl and bite.
This is a question from Radha, based on today's session.
Mm-hmm.
Did Indra do any other prideful mistake after the Parijata tree event? How to stop ourselves from making repeated mistakes?
Well, there's different in, we've discussed this. During every day of Brahma, there's 14 manus. And when there's a change of manus from this manu to the next manu, then there's a completely different set of demigods. He has appointments of directed persons who are assisting him in his manu program. So there's different Indras. There's 14 different Indras in every day of Brahma. So there's all kinds of Indras that do different things because there's different days of different manus. So back to Radha's question, does Indra do prideful things after this event of the Parijata tree? Yes. But, you know, we don't have, in many cases, we don't say, this was the Manu during the reign of Swayambhuva Manu or Vaivasvata Manu or the other Manus. We're not told, so we don't know. But at least she should know the tendency is there. And back to the earlier discussion, when the mode of nature is such and such, tendency is still there. We had this Indra discussion. From the modes of nature comes a body, and from the body comes the tendency of modes of nature. And from lower qualities comes the modes of nature. And those lower modes of nature then foster certain qualities. Anger, lust, greed, etc. Pride. So, it's one feeds the other, one appears to be the cause and the other the effect, and then the effect becomes the cause of the prior cause. So it's very dynamic and not easy to understand for sure. So back to her question, how can she become free from such mistakes and tendencies? Well, there's only one solution. You become pure. And you can, as you move in the direction of purity, those lower nature tendencies reduce, but still the tendency is there even as reduced. Then you can become free from those mistakes by purity. So strive for purity. That's the standard. Until you're there, you keep striving for purity. And when you're there, you continue to demonstrate purity for the benefit of the world, the others, those around you and the world. You have a long mission, Radha. A mission, a purity mission.
That's all, Guru Maharaj.
Okay. Okay.
Guru Maharaj, in today's class, you are talking about Krishna being neutral to Indra.
Krishna being what to Indra?
Neutral.
Neutral.
To Indra. That really scares me because Indra is a mixed devotee, and Krishna's reciprocation as being neutral to Indra.
Well, in what context did you hear it said that Krishna is neutral? It's in the purport, right?
Yeah, Guru Maharaj.
Okay, so way over there there's demons, and way over there there's non-devotees. But some people, so it's Krishna, Indra is a devotee, but he's a mixed devotee. In that sense, neutral. He's not to be neglected, he's not to be destroyed either. It's neutral means in between, in that case. He's neither in this extreme category or that extreme category. In that sense, neutral, not, it's mixed. He's not leaning this way only or leaning that way only.
Okay.
Krishna recognizes him as a devotee. That's why he did what he did, to help purify, because he cares about his devotee, Indra. He didn't want to see him proud, so he helped him become free from pride. Okay, we're done. Something further? No? You're good. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.